Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery. In this episode, we'll be talking about riddles, rhymes, and games.
Old Mother Goose, when she wanted to wander, would ride through the air on a very fine gander. Mother Goose had a house 'twas built in a wood where an owl at the door for sentinel stood. She had a son Jack, a plain-looking lad. He was not very good, nor yet very bad. She sent him to market a live goose he bought. "See, mother," says he, "I have not been for naught." Jack's goose and her gander grew very fond. They'd both eat together or swim in the pond. Jack found one fine morning, as I have been told, his goose had laid him an egg of pure gold. Jack ran to his mother the news for to tell, and she called him a good boy and said it was well. Jack sold his gold egg to a merchant untrue, who cheated him out of half of his due. Then Jack went a-courting a lady so gay, as fair as the lily, as sweet as the may. The merchant and squire soon came at his back, and began to belabor the sides of poor Jack. Then old Mother Goose at that instant came in, and turned her son Jack into feigned harlequin. She then with her wand touched the lady so fine, and turned her at once into sweet columbine. The gold egg in the sea was thrown away then, when an odd fish brought her the egg back again. The merchant then vowed the goose he would kill, resolving at once his pockets to fill. Jack's mother came in, and caught the goose soon, and mounting its back, flew up to the moon. Hello, hello, and welcome to New World Witchery. Tonight, we're going to be talking about child's play, basically. Not the Chucky kind.
No!
Because Lane doesn't like Chucky very much.
Or at all.
Okay, well, no, what we're going to talk about tonight are rhymes, games, and riddles. So why are we talking about this in terms of, I mean, this is a folk magic witchcraft type podcast. Mm-hmm. I think we've established that after 40 episodes. It's essentially so focusing on those topics. So right. Why riddles, rhymes, and games?
Well, we really want to try to take the simple childlike things that, you know, we all kind of grew up doing, or some that you may not know, and, you know, how they relate to us now as adults, and kind of try to tie that back into witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how you can kind of use that in your craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just so you don't think that, oh my god, they're brilliant and geniuses and they've come up with this, they've plucked it from the air, it is gold delivered unto you. We actually got a really awesome email from a listener, I believe it's Anastasia,
mm-hmm.
Where she sent us this excellent article by Elizabeth Yetter. And it was essentially an article exploring the different magical facets of facets.
Facets. Hmm.
I love facets. They're fascinating.
You got spiffy there.
I did get spiffy. Looking at the different magical aspects of various children's rhymes. And not just children's rhymes. She looks a lot at different games and charms that were used. At different times through history, some of the examples, which were sort of intercutting a bunch of these rhymes into this episode, so you'll probably hear a few of these. But, you know, of course, there's the, you know, he loves me not kind of rhyme,
mm-hmm.
which was a divinatory style of rhyme.
Right, and kids, I mean, I know I did that when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
It's silly, and I think you kind of even know it's silly when you're doing it, but, you know, we still did it.
Mm-hmm. And it's, and the thing about it is it actually is, you know, Not necessarily take it very seriously. It's a message from the, you know, the gods or the ancestors kind of divination.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely sort of like a way to practice this sort of divinatory magic.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're sort of doing it in a very silly way, it does sort of teach you how to get into the mind frame of asking the right questions for divination.
Mm.
Like knowing how to phrase a question and how to sort of get in the right headspace for it. Or so I think. And there were all sorts of other things. There were some agricultural rhymes, which we'll probably get into here in a little bit as well. But, let's start really with the children's rhymes. Why would we think of children's rhymes if we're thinking of, maybe not even witchcraft, but just sort of witchiness in general?
I mean, there's there's some that you can, that you read over and you're kind of like, wait, what is that? Mm-hmm. Some of them are pretty witchy in and of themselves.
Yeah, there's one that you'll hear recorded somewhere in here, which is basically the tale of Mother Goose, mm-hmm. which involves Mother Goose with her son Jack and a golden egg climbing on the back of a goose to fly up to the moon at one point, which a lot of that imagery is pretty straightforward. It's sort of Teutonic mythology.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, you know, Frau Holla, the Mother Hulda, trying to think of some of the other names that she goes by, but sort of that mythology that sort of has these tiny little remnants that are sort of jammed into fairy tales. Mm-hmm. And so, like, one thing I think about is that in a lot of these nursery rhymes, you're getting sort of the really, really, really either highly distilled version of mythology, or you're getting a very sort of watered down version of that mythology.
Yeah. Another one that we wanted to bring up was, what's it called? The Crooked Man?
Crooked Man. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that, you know, a lot of people talk about walking the crooked path, you know, when they're witchcraft and mm-hmm. Certain types of witchery.
Right. And in that one, you've got him finding a crooked sixpence, which, just to explore that one as a straight witchy thing. Let's break that one apart. That's a good place to start.
Okay. So he walks a crooked mile first.
Mm-hmm. Crooked path.
Yes.
Right.
So not on the straight and narrow, basically.
Right. Exactly. His path meanders back and forth. It's got that kind of lightning bolt shape. Mm-hmm. But it also sort of is bent and crooked like a tree, like a world tree kind of a path. There's a Kabbalistic meaning of it, which is the path of the lightning flash, which is sort of this, movement down the tree of life in Kabbalistic lore. See Uriah Helene's excellent podcast for more on that. Okay. So there's that. What's the next thing?
He finds a crooked sixpence.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and as I was starting to say, if you have money that's, you know, bent or marred in some way, it's money that's no longer good in our world, but it is good for use in the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of the things I do is I use shredded dollar bills, legally acquired shredded dollar bills. I'm pointing this out. You can buy them. You can buy a giant 40-pound bag of them. It's actually like a 5-pound bag, but it's $40.
Whew.
So, but it lasts you forever. And then you take that spirit money and you can burn it on charcoal as an offering to ancestors. And they can use it in the spirit world. Sort of a throwback to, I think, Egyptian mythology, mm-hmm. where they would...
The river Styx.
Yeah. Pack in.
Pay your toll, basically, to get across.
Mm-hmm. Or to have a party, whatever.
You know.
Cut loose, kick back. Okay. Well, looking at also, like, just the fact he's a crooked man, what does that mean?
Hmm. What does that mean?
I asked you this time.
Well, I mean, it's just, to me, it's the same as walking the path, but it's also, it could not just walking the walk, but talking the talk, you know, that kind of, but yeah, just, you know, being it, not just saying it, I guess, practicing what you preach.
Yeah, so he sort of matches his path in that
way. Yeah, there we go.
I could see that. And I kind of think of it as he's, neither so godly as to stand nor so lowly as to stoop.
Hmm.
So he sort of, rather than, you know, being the upright moral, you know, somebody who obeys a very specific staunch set of rules, he's somebody who has to sort of make up his own rules. So it's, what is it? The Bob Dylan lyric I told you recently. It was to live outside the law, you must be honest, I think is what it was. It's that sort of thing where, like, he's not going to fit in with upright society, nor is he necessarily going to crawl on the ground like an animal, so he's not quite that either. But he's somewhere between the two, and so he has to, you know, live outside of normalcy.
But again, it's that whole between the worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of between the worlds, so what's one of the next lines after he finds a crooked sixpence?
By a crooked stile.
Ah, what's a stile?
Isn't that like a post for a fence or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's where if you think about a turnstile, like a subway, like where you go through, it's the same kind of thing, except an old turnstile, obviously, they didn't have the mechanical parts. So what you would do, and I'll try to find a picture of a style so you can see what it looks like, but you would have, for example, like there's the wall in your field. You would have one step up over here and one step down over here so that animals couldn't figure out to do the catty corner thing. Like your cow couldn't step up and over. So they would step up and be like, oh, can't get over that. But you would be able to step up and you'd have to twist your body around to get to the other part of the stile. So you would have to kind of go backwards down.
Interesting.
And so it was sort of a hedge crossing technique almost to cut through the stiles.
That's pretty cool.
I think so. Okay, so against a crooked style, bought a crooked cat.
Come on.
Come on, it's a cat. We got that. Who caught a crooked mouse. Okay.
And they all live together in a little crooked house.
Okay, so there again, if a cat catches a mouse, is it likely to live together with it?
No.
No, but this one does. Why? Hmm. And I think what you're really dealing with there is a question of, I don't know if I would call it like a natural communion, like it's a sense that all these things kind of can live in harmony that should naturally not be in harmony. Or if you might even be looking at it as maybe the mouse is dead, but still lives with them. There could be sort of a, you know, kind of creepy thing going on there, but that's the least developed of my understanding of that rhyme. And then the little crooked house, I feel like that's actually what you're really looking at is house, not in terms of like a dwelling with walls and a roof, but in terms of if you think about like the House of York or the House of Lancaster.
Oh, okay.
That's your established lineage. So they all live together. And what's the size situation that you've got there? You've got the man, the cat, and the mouse. This is your passage of your line. It's going down the line. Hmm. So the mouse is sort of like your youngest initiate, your novice. Your cat is your middle. And then your man is your sort of the founder of the tradition. And something Peter Padden has talked about on his show is, you know, you can have a practice for you. You have your practice. And then you might initiate somebody into your practice. And so now they're part of your practice. But when they initiate somebody, that's a tradition. Once you've hit that third level. Because now your initiates are initiating. And so you've established a line and a tradition.
Hmm.
And I don't necessarily 100% subscribe to that. I don't necessarily 100% disagree with it. I think it's an interesting thing to think about, especially in looking at a rhyme like this. So.
Okay.
All right. So that's exploding a children's nursery rhyme and turning it into something uber witchy.
Yes.
And all that being said, it's also just a nursery rhyme.
Yeah, that's true. We don't want anybody to think that we're, like, reading too much into these and, you know.
We absolutely are reading a ton into them, but we think that there's a foundation for that, but we also think that there's no reason that you can't just take it as a nursery rhyme either.
Right.
You know, children are not necessarily talking about secret initiations into third-generation lineages when they're singing these nursery rhymes.
I hope not. There was a crooked man, and he walked a crooked mile. He found a crooked sixpence against a crooked stile. He bought a crooked cat, which caught a crooked mouse, and they all lived together in a little crooked house. Speaking of things that kids don't really realize they're doing, I mean, mm-hmm. look at Ring Around the Rosie. And I know that that gets into games as well, but, you know, you still have the rhyme of Ring Around the Rosie, Pocket Full of Posy, Ashes, Ashes, We All Fall Down. Mm-hmm. And there's a definite ritual to that. There's a thing that you do. I mean, and most everybody knows it, like, I guess here in the States. I don't know about anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But I know we have some overseas listeners. But I would assume they would do it in England, but I don't know about it. You know, like,
I mean, I'm not going to say it started over in England, but it started somewhere in Europe.
I'm pretty sure it started in England. I actually did a paper on some children's games in my folklore class way back in the day. And
didn't you find evidence that it's, like, because everybody says this is a plague rhyme.
Right.
And I think that there is some connection to the plague. But you found, like, it's not something that grew right out of the plague.
No, that's what I found. And again, there's evidence to support both, and you pretty much just have to kind of see what you think. But I found a really old book on in the library on children's rhymes and games, and it gave several different versions of the Ring Around the Rosie rhyme, and a lot of them had nothing to do with even the ring around the rosier, like the ashes that came way later. And yeah, it just, it kind of evolved like rhymes do. And as you go over the years, it's been around for so long. So yeah, I found that it had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. And really, honestly, when I hear like ring around a rosy, cause I also hear it occasionally as ring a ring a rosy. And it reminds me of this Scottish, which is real, which is the, it's like, come and go ye before to come and go ye, if you will no go before to come or let we, come or let we, ring a ring a widdershins, Lincoln lively widdershins. And like, it's this very specifically Scottish kind of a rhyme, but there's that ring a ring a widdershins, which is ring a ring a rosy. You know, there is something to that. I think.
I always think of, May Day, like going around the maypole.
Oh, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, they would usually decorate their hair and, you know, the pole and everything with flowers and ribbons. So, you know, and I can, like, a tradition of May Day is to leave flowers on people's porches and things like that. So you would have flowers in your pocket, you know. So I don't know, like, it makes sense to me, but I don't know if I'm just, like, pushing my own thoughts onto it. I'm not saying that's what I've found to be true.
But no, like, and that's something else I think that we should sort of talk about there is a lot of this does have to do with the fact that these kinds of rhymes and sort of folk charms are, you know, at their most superficial value, they might just be nonsense, you know, nonsense lyrics. But something I really like about these nursery rhymes is I think if you start using them, they work as a chant. And not necessarily in sort of like a, you know, I hate to say this because it sounds really condescending, but not as sort of like a, you know, star hawk, you know, we all come from the goddess kind of chant, which I have trouble getting into something like that because I'm too aware of the meanings that are right there at the surface. But if you get me going ring around a rosy or ring a ring a rosy in a, you know, with a group of witches, I get into that headspace a lot better. I can kind of get into a witchy headspace a lot better using those sorts of things because all of the imagery is really sublimated in there.
Yeah, it's
sort of buried in those rhymes.
And it's more subtle. It's not as so, like, in your face.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, once you start losing yourself, maybe, you know, little snatches of the words will kind of surface in your consciousness as you're singing them, and they'll make more sense to you. Like, that's the kind of thing that, I don't know, that just really appeals to me. But I mean, that being said, like, I'm not dissing anybody who does enjoy, you know, the more, more modern or more, sort of folk songy versions that have become popular. Because I think that those also function in much the same way. They're another, just a sort of newer incarnation of the same kind of tradition.
Yeah. It just depends on what works for you. What doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. Then up Jack got, and home he did trot, as fast as he could caper, to old Dame Dob, who patched his knob with vinegar and brown paper.
There were two blackbirds sat upon a hill. The one was named Jack, and the other named Jill. Fly away, Jack, fly away, Jill. Come again, Jack,
Come again, Jill. You brought up a really interesting point, actually, about why these rhymes might get you into a witchy headspace. I think you brought up the point.
We kind of came on it together, but we were basically talking about, like, kind of trying to get it straight in our heads before we started recording. Just, you know, how these kind of relate to witchcraft. And Corey was making a point that, you know, these rhymes have been around for so long that you, just by saying them, you kind of connect to, you know, your ancestors or even your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might be, you know, I'm not saying it would work for everybody, it might be a good way to get to a childlike state of mind,
mm-hmm.
to sort of look at a problem from an innocent point of view, kind of have, you know, virgin eyes about mm-hmm. it.
Right. Put yourself in the perspective of someone who could easily believe in fairies, who could easily believe in magic
right.
being everywhere.
Right.
And I think that these rhymes kind of function in that way. They make you feel like a child, mm-hmm. like someone who has no trouble believing.
I mean, because I think back in, like, how readily I believed in things like fairies mm-hmm. and Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny mm-hmm. and, you know, stuff like that. That mm-hmm.
Which are
not,
real.
Not to say that...
They're all real.
I know fairies are, like, on a little bit of a different level because I believe in the kind of, like, the fae energy, but
right.
that's going to get me... Fluffy comments. But
she made rabbit ears.
That's okay.
That was so precious.
That's okay, though. But anyway, but my point is it's just how readily you believed, how strongly, like, and to get back into that space for, you know, any type of magic you may be doing is helpful, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think that when you're doing witchcraft, you know, one way that you can kind of check yourself as far as...
Before you wreck yourself.
yeah, so that's... I think that, you know, that childlike perspective does really help you. And that's not to say, like, you know, childlike perspective is, like, completely innocent and pure and children are not full of any badness. Because I have children. And they can be hateful.
Yeah.
They can be hateful. They're adorable, and I love them. And they're wonderful in so many ways. But they can be pretty hateful and spiteful. So if you're doing, you know, a curse, being in that childlike perspective can be just as powerful doing a curse as it can be, you know, be doing something where you're trying to, you know, get in touch with sort of like you said, a fae energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all has to do with, like, how sincerely you feel and how sincerely you put yourself into that mental and physical frame of doing witchcraft. And these rhymes, I think, help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all of that being said, now we've gone way philosophical about children's rhymes.
Wow.
Let's talk about, like, the folksy side of all this.
Okay.
If you're moving beyond just the children's rhymes, there are a lot of rhymes that have to do with things like agricultural.
And divination.
Yeah.
That's the main two that we've found.
Yes, absolutely. There's the one about the, you know, red sky at morning.
Mm-hmm.
Shepherds take warning, red sky.
I've also heard it sailors take warning.
Sailors take warning, uh-huh, yeah. And that has to do with weather divination.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've talked about that.
We have, mm-hmm. in the weather lore, mm-hmm. I believe. But
so, I mean, those are the kind of rhymes that you find surfacing, not just in children's circles. They seem to be things that people would just sort of memorize.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were easier to memorize.
Yep.
What are some of the other ones?
The one for the rabbit, one for the crow one.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just, you know, like, how many seeds to plant.
Yes.
Because you're planting one for a rabbit to eat, one for a crow to eat, one to rot, and one to grow. So,
right.
you know, you're basically, like, giving yourself insurance for your,
yes.
your crops.
Exactly. You're sort of, yeah, exactly. I like that. You're basically insuring that you're putting enough out there that some of it will come back to you.
Right.
And at the same time, I think you're also sort of engaging in a stewardship, like you were giving food to the animals.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that.
You know, you're taking care of the animals around your garden. And, you know, you're also sort of adding some fertilizer to your garden in that you have something that's going to rot and provide some more nourishment for the other seeds. Because the seed may not necessarily rot. It may be that, you know, when you start having to thin plants, you have to let those plants rot, and those will then turn into...
Right. It's almost like having a sacrifice.
Ooh.
Raising a sacrifice.
Ooh, that's very interesting. Things just got real witchy, folks. Oh. It ain't real witchcraft unless you start sacrificing things. Get the goat!
Oh, God.
Anyway. So, okay. And so then there are some other, there's one that's, like, it's hemp seed I set, hemp seed I sow, the young men whom I love come after me and mow. And that's a rhyme that you would do if you were a young girl. You would, scatter hemp seed around. I think you would actually do it around a church. I don't think that's actually in the essay that we were referencing earlier, but, the way I've heard it is you scatter this hemp seed around a church, and then whoever comes behind you and mows that hemp seed is the man that you'll marry.
Hmm.
So it could be, you know, a local parson, or it could be a local boy taking care of the church grounds.
Interesting.
In which case, at least you know he's a good fella. unless he's cutting hemp seed for some other reason. Hmm. It is hemp seed. Hmm.
That's interesting, though. The divination one is mostly for, like, who will I marry? Who loves me? That type of thing. Mm-hmm. It's mostly love type stuff.
It's the he loves me not.
Mm-hmm. And
petals out of a daisy.
Yes. And I'm trying to think of other ones. There's also one she references in the essay where mm-hmm. it's not just pulling the petals off a flower, but it's also pulling the seeds out of an apple.
Mm-hmm. Which is sort of like the twisting of the stem that you've talked about before.
Right.
But instead of doing that, I guess you would cut the apple open and pick out seeds and however many seeds you have.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, like, as you're saying the rhyme, you'd say, you know, he loves me, he loves me not, he loves me, he loves me not. Or in the case of this particular essay, he loves me, longs for me, desires me, wishes me well, wishes me ill, does not care. So whichever one you pull out the last seed on, that's the one that describes the feelings that you right. have. He loves me.
He don't.
He'll have me.
He won't.
He would if he could.
But he can't.
So he don't. One that they mention in the essay that I thought was really interesting is much more urban. It's the idea of jump rope.
Mm-hmm.
Using jump rope for divination.
Yeah. We did jump rope a lot when I was younger. That and the hand claps, which it's interesting. Like, they talk a lot about, I don't want to say divination, but, you know, with a really popular one, obviously, is Cinderella dressed in yellow, went upstairs to kiss her fella, made a mistake and kissed a snake. How many doctors will it take? And you keep counting up. So it's kind of a divination, mm-hmm. but it's just pertaining to the rhyme. It's not really pertaining to you. So I think it's jump ropes have gone away from that a little bit.
Yeah. No, I don't think that they're exclusively a divinatory thing, but I do think there are some where, and I wish they had put one of the rhymes actually in here, but they do have jump rhymes where, like, instead of doing 1, 2, 3, it would be A, B, mm-hmm. C, and that would be the initial of the person that you're going to marry or kiss or
who
loves you or whatever the situation is. So I mean, there's that element is sort of surfacing in a much more urban. I mean, not that you have to be in an urban environment to do jump rope, but when I think of people jump roping, I think of, like, on Sesame Street where the people are out on
right.
the
double dutchers.
Yeah, the double dutching on the curb.
Yes.
Yeah, and then there's another rhyme that is actually, I mean, it's a pretty close to a straight-up spell, which involves taking two pieces of paper with your two choices and sticking them on the back of your hand. You lick the back of them, stick them on your hand, and say this rhyme about blackbirds on a hill. And then you blow on them, and whichever one blows away is the decision that you should make. So... I think that's kind of, I mean, that's, again, a very straightforward divination kind of a thing,
mm-hmm.
In which you incorporate a nursery rhyme.
Yeah, there's also rhymes for, like, when I'm thinking, like, married in red,
mm-hmm.
something, something, I can't think of it, but it's, you know, just for kind of how happy you'll be, basically, in your marriage, like, depending on what color you wear.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about that one before, but
yeah,
there's just lots of little rhyming, things to remember, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And there's one I remember about Monday's child is fair of face, yes. Tuesday's child is full of grace.
Right.
Where each of these rhymes have sort of divinatory properties that can help you determine what your life will be like in one capacity or another, whether it's with love or luck or happiness or whatever it is.
So why do you think these have stuck around for so long? Like, why do we still do them? Just tradition, for the most part?
I mean, I think that there's an aspect of oral transmission. There's an aspect of... We've sort of done... It's like you were saying, tradition, but in the sense of, like, you know, your mother or nanny or whoever did it, so you remember it and you do it for your child, and it just sort of happens as almost an unconscious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, as a parent, there's an element of that I know that does exist because, you know, I default to telling stories that I know to Jack and default to, you know, saying some of the nursery rhymes I know best to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's part of that. And just fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and maybe talk a little bit about games and then riddles.
Okay.
Looking for magical supplies that are handcrafted with natural, organic, and ethical ingredients? Visit Forest Grove Botanica, a folk magic and medicine shop for the Pacific Northwest, at forestgrovebotanica.com.
It's rambles. It's listener feedback. It's books. It's book reviews. It's what I'm reading. What is it? It's the iPod Witch Podcast. The iPod Witch Podcast can be found on iTunes and at Podcast Alley. You can also go to iPodWitch.com. Come join your favorite babbling brook for the iPod Witch Podcast. Blessed be.
Hello, my name is Dave the Bard, and I'm the host of Druidcast, the podcast of the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. Each month we present a wonderful selection of music, poetry and story, plus an interview or presentation by one of the leading teachers within the Western mystery traditions. So if you're a modern druid, Wiccan, witch, Celtic, Christian, pagan, or just interested in nature spiritualities, tune in to Druidcast each month. You can find us on iTunes or on our website at www.druidry.org.
Okay, so we already touched a little bit on games with Ring Around the Rosie, but there are a couple more that I think are a little bit more obscure, but we can that still are pretty witchy.
Yes, one of them I covered on the blog at one point, and it was a game called Devil in the Promised Land, and it's I found it in a Foxfire book. It was Foxfire 6. I'll just kind of read what I see, which is, we played a game called The Devil in the Promised Land. A big branch went down through our pasture. Some places it was wide and some places were narrow enough to jump across pretty good. There'd be about 8 or 10 of us on one side. We put one on the other side and he was the devil. Now we had to cross that branch and go around him and jump the branch back. And if he caught us before we made the run around him, we had to go in on the devil's side.
So it's kind of like Red Rover.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Red Rover, which, again, you know, Red Rover. I wonder if there's something diabolical about Red Rover.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's all silly speculation. But so the reason I bring that up is, like, that's the kind of game I could totally see somebody using at, like, a gathering or a festival of some sort, because it's a good sort of icebreaker game for people. Mm-hmm. But there's also something sort of significant. Like, there's a sort of drama. Like, you're using an improvised theater. And the reason that it works is because it's theater that everyone knows the rules for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody can participate in this sort of mock battle, this mock adventure, journey, whatever it is. And you kind of know the rules to it. And so everybody participates equally, but you're sort of enacting something as you do it.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, there's, you know, some sort of diminished elements. You know, there probably are. It could be some leftover Roman ritual that we're actually doing. But like when I think about like London Bridge,
mm-hmm.
you know, way the London Bridge is, everybody has their arms up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people are walking underneath them.
Yes.
And then My Fair Lady, boom.
Yes, London Bridge falls and you catch somebody.
Right. That, do you remember in the scene in The Wicker Man where they have the swords?
Yes.
The sword dancing?
Yeah.
And somebody's head is in the middle of it. And it's not their head doesn't actually get chopped off. They use a dummy for that particular part of it. But it's that same principle. I see London Bridge and I go, that's a diminished sword dance. That's a variant of the sword dance. So these games are good ways to incorporate, you know, ritual and practice of sort of old pagany things into your work. And yet at the same time be doing something that you're having fun doing and that you can understand and that everybody else can understand what you're doing, I think. Such is my thoughts.
I like that. I like that assessment.
Thanks. And actually, a game that I played fairly recently with a group that I work with, we did something that I wound up just calling sort of the Wild Hunt. It was basically a modified Blind Man's Bluff. And here's the other thing about games is you can take a kid's game and make it as witchy as you want to make it.
And as adult as you want to make it.
Exactly. Not that kind of adult.
No, not well, that sounded wrong.
Maybe a Beltane. anyway, so like it was this modified Blind Man's Bluff where everybody's crawling around with blindfolds on and I hide a skull somewhere in the room and they're trying to find the skull. And if they find it, then they win the game. And the whole time I'm the one without the blindfold, you know, giving them directions. But the thing is I'm giving them directions that may or may not be true. And then anytime I ring a bell, they have to drop to the ground and I change positions in the room. If they happen to touch me, then I catch them. And once I catch them, they can take their blindfold off and they can start telling the people in the room either the right directions to get to the skull or the wrong directions to completely mislead them into touching me, in which case I catch them.
So what happens if they get the skull?
They get a prize.
Okay.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. It was fun. So, yeah, so, like, that's the, you know, you can, and why would you do that? What's the real witchcraft purpose of that? Bonding with other people is a part of that. But also, I think, again, you spend enough time groping around in a blindfold. If you don't come out of that with a little bit of an altered state of consciousness, then I you're spending way too much time doing other things that put you in an altered state of consciousness.
So it's sort of like an icebreaker both for you and other people and for you. To get into ritual
type. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. It doesn't all have to be, you know, wine and goblets and candelabras right from the outset. You can, you know, just get together, have a little bit of fun, and then that might put you in the right headspace to do some witchy work. Or it might be a good way to come down from doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Well, fun.
Are there any games that you can think of that you feel like would be, oh, I could totally witchify that?
Not off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You're terrible.
I am.
Useless. I made her cry.
When I count, they all go off around the house and down the hill and hide. And while I count, and I get through counting and stand well from the base, and they all start to slip around the house on the other side and beat me back to the base and get their hunger. Is it all here? No, no, is it all here? No, no, I ain't gonna come but one more time. Then I'm going to rock and mine. It's all here. Is it all here? No, no, is it all here? No, no. Willie, Willie, wee, look out for me. Here I come like a bumblebee. Is it all here? Is it all here? No, no. Is it all here? No, no. 185, 110, 185, the old black inn. Is it all here? Is it all here? No, no. Is it all here? No, no. I went down to the devil's house. Devil knocked my daddy down. Is it all here? Is it all here? No, no. Is it all here? No, no. Here I come, Willie, Willie, wee. Look out for me. Here I come like a bumblebee. Is it all here?
All right. Well, should we jump into riddles?
Yes.
All right.
Riddles.
Ah, damn it. Okay, so let me start by saying I got from a listener slash reader of the blog one of the most interesting and amazing packages I've ever gotten. And I can't go into too much detail about it because I haven't gotten permission necessarily to talk a whole lot about it. But what I will say is this. It requires me to solve a series of riddles. And in doing that, I think... It is one of the most unique gifts I've ever had because I have to work to get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes riddles so powerful.
Yes.
Is you have to put in some work to get a reward from them. And when you get a reward, there's this almost breaking of insight that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Where all of a sudden it's...
Well, and also a lot of riddles, you have to come at it from a different... Mm-hmm. perspective or think about things in a different way. Like, I don't know, what are some really popular riddles?
Well, there's the most famous riddle, which is the what walks in
that's
the morning
right.
on four legs, in the afternoon on two legs, and in the evening on three legs.
Yeah, and that's man.
Right. And then that you have to adjust your sense of time to
right.
be not morning, noon, and night, but early, middle, and late life.
Right.
So, yeah, okay. So, going from that. What were you saying?
Oh, just that, you know, you have to change how you look at things. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of another. There's something about, like, the answer is eyes. But I can't think of what the actual riddle is that goes with it.
I don't know. But, so, with a riddle, the witchy value of a riddle to me is that you can hide a lot of information
mm-hmm.
in a riddle that you want people to understand for themselves. So if you say you're training somebody or you're teaching somebody, if you give them an answer, they may or may not retain it. If they have to figure that answer out for themselves, they will probably remember it for the rest of their lives.
Yes. Yeah, and I really like that aspect of it. The, mm-hmm. Like the hidden knowledge that you have to go looking for. It's, mm-hmm. it's a little bit like a scavenger hunt or something. I don't know.
It is.
I just like the idea of it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's also the element of it, which is you can entertain a paradox with a riddle. In other words, you can have two things that shouldn't necessarily work together. And the riddle, whatever the solution to the riddle is, maybe is the thing that makes them both work.
Uh-huh. I see.
And that's a very witchy thing to do,
mm-hmm.
is to say, laws of physics, magic, and you make these two things work together, and witchcraft, boom. You know. and that's not a great equation, by the way.
That's all right.
It's late.
Yeah.
So let's look at some various riddles. And should we even attempt to give answers, or should we just be mean, give riddles, and see if people have answers? Oh, I know one set that you'll probably hear in here somewhere is the Devil's Nine Questions, which is a really famous riddle. That has to do with somebody being questioned by the devil, and to escape the devil, they have to answer these nine questions, involving things like, what is higher than a tree? What is deeper than the sea? heaven's higher than a tree and hell is deeper than the sea. So you have to be able to know that the answers in terms of these really big metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's fun.
Okay, I'll read one. What goes and goes and yet stands and stands.
So you're thinking about something that can go round and round yet stay in the same place.
A mill!
Yeah. Why, yes. Excellent. We probably should be giving people, like, 30 seconds or something to figure this out, but that would be really boring to
yes,
have 30
it would.
Seconds of silence. All right. What poor fellow passes up and down the steps on his head? Again, I think you kind of have to put yourself into an older mentality.
Yeah.
And think about it in terms of back in the days when shoes had the soles nailed on with tiny little nails, the nails would be turned up so that the heads would be on the flat part of the shoe, on the sole.
Oh, okay.
So they would always, every time you walk on a step, you're walking on the heads of the nails.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that makes sense. It's just...
Mm-hmm. And then...
Obscure.
And then just for that... And okay, so the reason we're throwing these riddles out there is just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There's nothing really witchy about some of these.
No, not all of them.
The mill.
But I mean, the whole, you know, telling a riddle is, you mm-hmm. know, as far back as the Sphinx. You know, like the Sphinx's riddle. You know, like in... Why does he tell a riddle? So, will it not kill you, or...?
Yeah, if you can't solve the Sphinx's riddle, it will kill you.
That's what I thought. But, like, don't you gain something if you do? Is it just passage?
Yeah, you get... I think in that particular story, he gets passage through wherever he's trying to go. I think Egypt in that situation. I don't know. Actually, no, that's not Egypt. It's Greece. It's somewhere in Greece.
Yeah. I keep thinking of Harry Potter and the Sphinx in the maze.
See, if I think of sphinxes, this is terrible. I think of the Neverending Story and those things that shoot laser beams out of their eyes.
So. Freaking laser beams.
I just want freaking laser beams on a freaking sphinx.
So. You must answer my questions 9. Sing 99 and 90. Or you're not God, you're one of mine. And you were the weaver's bonny. What is whiter than the milk? Sing 99 and 90. And what is softer than the silk? And you are the weaver's bonny. Snow is whiter than the milk. Sing 99 and 90. And down is softer than the silk. And I am the weaver's bonny. Oh, what is higher than a tree?
Anyway, and then, one final riddle that I really, really like.
Okay.
What is it that was given to you that belongs to you, but that only your, but that your friends use more than you? And the reason I like
your
this,
name.
Yes.
Yes.
So I like that one because I do think that there's sort of a witchy significance to it. In
definitely.
That, you know, a lot of people are eager to choose their magical name,
mm-hmm.
and I have nothing against it. I'm not saying you're wrong for doing it. Stop. Stop judging me. But no, I do think it's interesting, you know, if you are assigned a name in some way, if that name is given to you,
right?
Then, you know, it's yours. You own it, but you don't use it. Somebody else uses it, and that might be your gods, that might be your ancestral spirits, that might be your coven mates, that might be your friends.
Well, I think it's interesting that a lot of times, like, when you're good friends with somebody, you don't actually really use their name that often.
Mm-mm.
Like, sometimes it feels... Like, for example, with my husband, you know, like, we use pet names a lot, and it'll be almost awkward to call him by his real name. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, that's weird. We never say that, really.
Well, it'd be a lot easier if his name wasn't Ruprecht. Come here, Ruprecht.
How do you think Benedict Cumberbatch feels?
Cumberbatchin'.
Oh, Lord.
I read a tweet from Ken Jennings recently that said 1 out of every 3 British people is actually named Benedict Cumberbatch. Which I just want to believe is true. But I don't think it is. Anyway,
yeah, we've digressed, but...
Yeah. So, anyway,
I just like the riddles for, like, the working towards knowledge and the having to kind of like it being coded
mm-hmm.
and, you know, even possibly you making up your own to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a real, like, trying to think of an actual riddle that's difficult to solve.
Mm-hmm.
is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it does sort of show a certain mastery of non-logic in a way.
Yeah.
Of being able to handle a paradox or a, you know.
One of my favorites is, what can you put into a barrel that makes it lighter?
Is it a hole?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that one a lot too. That one confused the hell out of me when I was younger, and then when I finally got it, I never forgot it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a, you know, since we're talking about riddles and, you know, witchcraft in general, there's a whole series of riddles that appear in Robert Graves' The White Goddess, which are really central to a lot of traditional witchcraft. And I think they're largely based on the Song of Amergin, or Amergin. I don't speak Irish, people, or Gaelic, or whatever. I'm just digging myself into a deeper hole.
It's all right. I don't
speak fancy talk.
Nope.
Anyway. So there's the series of, like, I'm the wave upon the land, I'm the hawk in the sky, like, and he would name all these things that he is, and you have to kind of figure out what each thing means.
Hmm.
And there's an element of, like, if you can figure all that out, then you understand the entire history and mythology of that people.
Yeah.
So you could, riddles are like, okay, so poetry is sort of condensed storytelling to me in a lot
yes,
of ways.
Yes, definitely.
And where you're using a lot of image and metaphor to convey bigger themes in a very tight amount of space. And, you know, also convey emotions as well. Riddles to me are a way of condensing even tighter all that information.
Okay.
So you pack one metaphor, which is your answer, into another metaphor, which is your question. And if people get both of those things, then they can expand upon those and get sort of the poetry of the two together, and then once you get beyond the poetry, then you get into the whole, like, oh, there's a whole myth that goes along with that riddle.
Cool.
So I think that that's really important to witches and things
and stuff and things.
So cool. Well, I don't want to belabor the point, but anyway, so I just thought it would be fun for us to talk a little bit tonight about the different, you know, sort of childish games and how they're not always that childish when it comes to witchcraft. Yeah.
And how we can still use them today.
We can still use them today. The more you know.
And knowing is half the battle, G.I. Joe.
Oh, God. We can talk about children's television and its relevance to witchcraft.
Yes. It's worse here we come.
I worship the big bird, do you? The mighty Snuffleupagus demands your blood.
I bird.
The eyelashes they bring doom.
Wow. And this is where we are.
So,
okay.
Clearly, it's time to end the show.
Yes.
We hope this has been at least mildly amusing, brought some sort of mild interest and revelation into your lives.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, sorry if it feels a little rushed. We just didn't want to, like, harp on it over and over because, you know, it's simple ideas. We just wanted to give a few examples and that'd
be
that.
Yeah, but we'd love to hear other people's riddles. That's something that really, that's part of the reason I wanted to do this. I want to hear everybody else's riddles and everybody else's rhymes. So if you have some, please send them to us. And if you have other thoughts on what we've talked about tonight, we'd love to hear them. You can reach us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Or there's the blog, newoldwitchery.com.
Mm-hmm. You can also follow us on Twitter, which is @NWWitchery. NWWITCHERY.
Okay.
Well, I want to throw an extra W in there.
I know, I always do too.
Is there any other way that they can reach us?
Smoke signals.
We'll see them. Don't forget about our Spring Lore contest. We've got that going on until March. Send us your Spring Lore. There's details on the website, and you'll have a link in the show notes to find out more about that. Mm-hmm. And you can win one of three fabulous prizes. The Compass and Key shop is open.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff there. If you want to buy it, you can. If you want card readings, I'm happy to give them. I've got details on that on the sidebar of the blog. Also, if you're wondering, if you're a regular follower of the blog and you're thinking, oh my goodness, he's not posting very much lately, I'm not. And I don't really have an excuse for that other than that life has just been really, really busy.
Mm-hmm.
Got the two kids, of course, and then I've taken on a lot of extra responsibility at work. I know that's a lame excuse, but I do intend to put out some more articles soon. I have ideas for what I want to do. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and put all the research together. So,
Fair enough, dude.
Yeah. And I just can't, you know, I can't feel obligated to you know, try and produce content every week and then, you know, do my job and be a dad. And it's just too much for me.
I don't think anyone is sitting there going, God, Corey, post more. Dang.
I know. People are probably like, just shut up, Corey. Stop.
No, I just don't think anyone's like, you know, I don't know. It's not like, you know, they're paying for it or anything.
Right.
You're doing them a service.
Oh, thanks. No, it's but it is something, you know, I feel bad sometimes about not producing regularly. And so, this is me saying, like, I probably still won't produce regularly, but I will try to get some more stuff out sometime soon. And if I don't, I'll put something up letting you know sort of how long it will be before I get more stuff going. Anyway, all that's a lot of rambling to say. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music.
Okay.